We want to study a little bit tonight about Jesus. We talked last week about Jesus being the Son of God. We talked about John chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God and the Word was God. Today we want to focus on verse 14 of that same chapter. John chapter 1 and verse 14, you may be familiar with it. After he said all of that about the Word being God, he then said in verse 14, "And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld His glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." And so we see that Jesus, the Word, who was God, and we saw that very clearly last week with verse after verse after verse, we see then in verse 14 that that Word became flesh. In John chapter 19, verse 5, Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate said unto them, "Behold the man." He didn't say, "Behold the deity," or "Behold the Son of God." You see, he didn't recognize Jesus as that. He just said, "Hey, everybody look at this man." Now that tells us something interesting. Even though it's not expressly mentioned, we see from this passage, as well as others that we're going to look at briefly, that there was nothing spectacular or incredibly special about Jesus' appearance that people just looked at Him and said, "He's God." When people looked at Him, they saw a man. That's all they saw. Just a man. And that's what Pilate saw. And that's what he expected that everybody else that looked at Jesus was going to see. A man. How many of you have ever heard of the doctrine known as docetism? Don't give me ugly looks like that just for mentioning a word. Make it sound like I said a curse word up here or something the way you said. Well, docetism, D-O-C-E-T-I-S-M, all those isms end with the I-S-M, D-O-C-E-T-ism, docetism, is a doctrine that began late in the first century and early in the second century that believed that because human beings were sinful and because, in essence, flesh was sinful, and since God cannot sin, then God could never have become flesh because flesh was sinful. And that theory became, certainly it wasn't the mainstream belief in the church in those days, but a large group of people believed that there, because of that, they said that what happened was God only appeared to be a man, that he wasn't really a man, he just looked like one. Basically, that it was all just special effects. It was really God, but he just made it look like he was a man. Well, Jesus calls himself the Son of Man, emphasizing his humanity, 80 times in the four books of the Gospel. That's an average of 20 times per book. It's an average of almost one time per chapter in those four books. He calls himself the Son of Man. He wanted to emphasize that he was a descendant of human beings and that he himself was a human being. 1 John 1 and verse 1, many believe that docetism was the very false doctrine that John was combating with his writings. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 1, John says, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and that's really the word, I mean, we've examined it, and our hands have handled of the Word of life. You see, John wants to point out, I was there when Jesus was here. And he's writing after Jesus is gone, of course, like all of the New Testament writers. So Jesus isn't still walking among them. But John wants to remind everybody, I was there. I heard Him speak. I saw Him. I looked. I examined Him. And I touched Him. My hands touched His body. He was flesh and blood. He was a human being just like the rest of us. You see, it wasn't just a ghost forming the shape of a human being. He was a human being. John wants to emphasize that. Now I want us to notice, and we're going to fly through this, but I hope you don't have cramps in your hands from writing. People thought that he was a man. And we're going to look at several just real quickly. You can look them up later because we don't have time. There were so many I didn't even have time to put them all in here. But the ones that I did put, you can look the verses up. The disciples, his own disciples. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 27. They said, what manner of man is this? Peter. Matthew 26 and verse 74. And again, after Jesus' resurrection in Acts 2 and verse 22. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God. You see, he was a man. People from his hometown, well, who would know better than the ones who had seen him as a little kid growing up? People from his hometown in Matthew 13, 55 through 56. Pilate, we saw one verse in John 19, 5 already, but also in John 18, 29, then John 19, 5, Luke 23, 4. You may not be able to get all of these, but basically John chapter 18 and 19 and Luke chapter 23. But verses 4, 6, 13, and 14, all of those places, Pilate refers to him as a man. Speaks of him being a man. Pilate's wife, Matthew 27 and verse 19. A soldier who witnessed his death. Now, this one's significant because he witnessed his death. Spirits don't die. Ghosts don't die. God can't die, but a man can die. And a soldier, particularly a Roman soldier, who was in charge of crucifixion, had seen men die before, and he knew what a dying man looked like. And this soldier who witnessed his death in Mark 15 and verse 39 said, truly this man was the Son of God. Well, I tell you what, that centurion was, he was pretty smart. If he followed through with what he knew there, then certainly he would have become a Christian in the near future. Truly this man was the Son of God. Now that went contrary to everything that the Jews believed. The Jews didn't believe. A lot of the Jews didn't. Some of them expected that. Nathanael, for one. But some of the Jews didn't, oh no, God can't have a son. But this fellow, he knew the difference. A centurion who Jesus helped in Luke chapter 7 and verse 8. A Pharisee, just some Pharisee who had Christ over for dinner in Luke chapter 7 and verse 39, probably saw him eating and thought, you know what? Ghosts and spirits don't need to eat like this fellow is. Maybe he smelled him. Said, whew, he's stinky from the long journey to get to my house. Ghosts and spirits don't have a smell like sweat. The chief priests, the scribes, and the Pharisees, Luke 15, 2, John 9, 16, and 24, John 11, and verse 47, again and again. He's a man. The thief who was crucified with him, Luke 23 and verse 41. Another case of a centurion who watched his death, it may be the same one, but this one in Luke 23 and verse 47. Certainly this was a righteous man, so possibly a different centurion. John the Baptizer in John chapter 1 verses 29 and 30. In John chapter 3 verses 26 and 27. His own cousin, John, knew him as a man. Nicodemus, in John chapter 3 and verse 2, and in John chapter 7 and verses 50 and 51. The Samaritan woman at the well, in John chapter 4 and verse 29. The Jews, in John chapter 5 and verses 11 and 12. And in chapter 6 and verse 52. In chapter 7 and verse 15. In chapter 10 and verse 33, in chapter 11 and verse 36 and 37, in chapter 18 and verse 40, in chapter 19 and verse 12, some other people in Jerusalem, in John chapter 7 and verse 12, and in John chapter 7 and verse 27, the officers of the Pharisees, in John chapter 7 and verse 46, a blind man that Jesus healed in John chapter 9 and verse 11. And in John 9 and verses 31 through 33. The believers in John chapter 10 verses 41 and 42. Many that believed on Him spoke of Him as being a man. Caiaphas, one of His chief enemies. John 11 and verses 49 and 50. Paul, in Acts chapter 13, verses 38 and 39. In Acts chapter 17 and verse 31. He has appointed a day in which He will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom He has ordained, whereof He gave assurance unto all men, in that He had raised Him from the dead. The Hebrew writer, Hebrews 8 and verse 3, Hebrews 10 and verses 10 through 13. And Jesus Himself. We already saw that He called Himself the Son of Man 80 times. In John chapter 8 and verse 39, He says in verses 39 and 40, rather, in verse 40 in particular, He says, "But now ye seek to kill Me, a man that hath told you the truth." See, He thought He was a man. In John chapter 15 and verse 24, He again says that He had done works which none other man did. He put Himself in the same category with other men. That I am in this category and no other man, and others in that same category, has done what I've done. Well, if Jesus wasn't a man, then all of these people were fooled or lying. Now you might say His followers and He Himself might have lied to try to make Himself out to be something He wasn't. But why would His enemies and total strangers have done that? They would have had no reason to lie about it. You think He could have fooled that many people? Well, in fact, we see that hundreds or even thousands of people believed that Jesus was human. John 1 verses 1 and 14, we see that John the Apostle, the disciple whom Jesus loved, one of the closest of His disciples, who went with Him everywhere, this same John believed that He became flesh and blood like the rest of us. Well, what did Jesus do that made these people believe He was human? Let's look at a few of these things. Let's examine some of the things He did. Like other human beings, Jesus was born. Matthew chapter 1 and verse 18, and Matthew chapter 2 and verses 1 through 4. Jesus was born. He came into this world more naturally than some of us. His mother gave natural birth to him. They didn't have cesarean. Okay? She didn't get any painkillers. He came into this world naturally. And if you don't believe it, well, you better ask his mother, because I'm sure she remembers it. Good luck finding her, though. But if you make it to heaven, you can ask her about it then. But she gave birth to him. She knew he was a human being. He grew. Secondly, like all other human beings, Luke 2 and verse 40, the child grew and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Luke 2, verse 52, Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. Ghosts and spirits don't grow. Not in stature at any rate. Oh, we talk about growing spiritually, we understand that, but if a spirit doesn't gain weight and get 6 inches taller, and oh, spirits, don't do that. It doesn't work that way. He grew. Now you think about, I want to impress upon you how important it is for us to think about this when we think about the Word becoming flesh. Because it changes our relationship with Jesus if we think of Him only as divine, deity, God, and don't think about Him as a normal human being, just like us. Because but He's God. He's out there, and we can't approach. He never understands. We talked about this morning. It was so important for Him to come to this earth and become flesh and blood because we needed somebody who could understand us. We have a high priest who can be touched by our infirmities because He Himself faced all of the same temptations that we face. And we'll look at that briefly in a minute. But we've got to understand, He was a human being. When He was a baby, when He was a child, He cried if He got hurt. He probably got cranky when He was tired. When He was a baby, His mother had to change whatever version of diapers they may have used back then. She had to do that. When He got hungry, he probably cried just like every other baby. Feed me. We don't think about Jesus that way. He's just perfect. But He was a baby. He was a baby who had to go through all of the things that babies have to go through. If He was colicky or if He was sick and cried through the night, His parents had to stay up with Him just like you may have had to stay up with one of your kids. I know I've done that. He was just like every other child born into this world. He was a baby. He had to learn to crawl before He could walk. He had to learn to walk before He could run and hop and skip. He had to learn baby babble talk before He could learn to speak intelligently. Just like every other child that was ever born. And yet by the age of 12, He was astonishing people with His wisdom and His knowledge and His ability to answer Bible questions. He was asking questions and answering questions. And everybody was, wow, you know, what a kid. He's only 12 and he knows all these things. Now realize that he didn't receive those miraculous abilities until he began his ministry at age 30 when he was baptized. All of his growing up years, even though he was the Son of God, he didn't have these miraculous abilities. Do you ever notice that after this case in Luke chapter 2 where they go to the temple and Jesus is in the temple and Mary and Joseph come and find Him, it says He went home and He subjected Himself to His parents. That's the last time we have a mention of Joseph being alive. By the time Jesus begins His ministry, we read about His mother Mary and His brothers. We read about His brothers and sisters. We read about him telling John to take care of my mother for me when he was dying on the cross. But we don't read about his father, Joseph, his adoptive father. We don't read any more about him. Now, while Jesus knew that this man was not his biological father, that he was the Son of God, this man had taken him from the time he was born and raised him and taught him the skill of carpentry and taught him everything he knew about the Scriptures and about being a good, righteous, God-fearing Jew. And somewhere along the line, his father died, his adoptive father. This man who had been his only earthly father died. And Jesus didn't raise him from the dead. Jesus didn't stop it from happening. Because at that time, he didn't have the miraculous abilities that he had during his ministry. And yet Jesus lost that. You know, sometimes we think, well, Jesus just doesn't know how it is to lose somebody you love or somebody you care for. He does. He lost the man who was closer to him in this world than any other man. That's important. As we look at Jesus' humanity, to understand that, Jesus face the same kind of problems that we face. Imagine for those years that between there, where Jesus felt the responsibility of caring for his mother and also the greater responsibility of doing what he came to the earth to do, of teaching and then ultimately dying at the young age of 33 or so. And leaving his mother alone to fend for herself. No wonder he called on John to take care of her. And the Bible says that John did that. He trusted John with his most precious earthly possession. It wasn't a car, it wasn't a house, it was his mother. We think about that. This is Jesus. He's a human being. He's a man. He went through the same kinds of things we went through and that we go through. He rested and slept. Oh, sorry, I skipped. He ate and drank. Mark 2 and 16 and Luke 24, verses 41 through 46. I'm trying to get ahead of myself because we're running out of time. He rested and slept. Matthew 8, 24 through 25 and John 4 and verse 6. He was wearied from his journey. You see, these are the kinds of things that human beings do. He sweated. You know, this is not something we think. We don't picture Jesus as sweaty and yucky and needing to bathe. You know, you never see that picture painted in stained glass, do you? You never see that picture in your Bible, in those Bibles that have the pictures in them. You know, you don't see the picture of Jesus all sweaty and grungy from a hard day's travel and a hard day's work. And you don't see that. Luke 22 and verse 24. Luke 7 and verse 44. He even talks about it. He turned to the woman. He said unto Simon, "Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet." Remember, people back then, they walked around all day in sandals on dusty roads. And you know how sweaty feet get. And the smell of sweaty leather. Not pleasant, I'm sure. And all that dirt and grime and the dust from the road. I mean, if you doubt it, just how often do you wash your car? Now imagine your feet going where the tires of that car go. That's pretty nice. And he says, "Simon, you didn't give me any water for my feet to wash my feet." But she's washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. And we read that and we think, oh, how wonderful. Oh, wow, what a lovely. She cried on his feet. She wiped it with her hair. And we don't think about just how nasty that was. How many of us would want to get that close to some sweaty, dirty feet? You see, she was showing her love, her real love for Christ and her willingness to put herself down there and do a job that most of us would say, hey, wash your own feet. Jesus was a man who had physical needs of, you know, personal hygiene. He had to take care of. He had to clip his fingernails. He had to cut his hair. He had to do all of these things. Trim his beard. And all these kinds of things. He said, how do you know he had a beard? Well, Isaiah tells us, they plucked the hairs of my chin. Now, they couldn't have plucked his hairs of his chin if he didn't have some hairs growing out of his chin. But he had to take care of all of these things. The basic human things that we all have to take care of. I don't know if they brushed teeth back then, but whatever they did, you know, he had teeth, and they would have gotten kind of yucky sometimes. He would have had bad breath in the morning. I mean, we don't think about Jesus that way, though. But he was a man. That's part of being human being, is having those things happen to us. And we need to reconcile our picture of Jesus with these things, and it's hard because it's a different picture than we usually see. It's not what we think about when we think about Jesus. He cried. Luke 19 and verse 41. John 11 and verse 35. Jesus wept. He wept. In our society today, they say a man shouldn't cry. Well, Jesus was a man. And he cried. He wept. He didn't weep over the things that men today weep over. Men don't have any problem weeping over it when their favorite football team loses. But Jesus wept over important things. He wept because another friend of his died, Lazarus. Now, even though he did raise Lazarus from the dead, unlike his earthly father, he raised Lazarus from the dead, but he still wept over the loss. The Jews, when they saw it, they said, "See how he loved him." They knew that weeping was a sign of love. When you lose a loved one, you're going to cry. Any of you who've lost loved ones, you know, you're going to cry about it. He wept over the city of Jerusalem because he knew the sad, sad spiritual condition of that city. You see, he wept over important things. He didn't weep over incidental things. He was touched by others and he touched others. That's something a spirit can't do. Mark 8 and verse 22 and 23. Luke 24 verses 39 and 40. And we saw 1 John 1:1 already. John points out, hey, you know, we touched him. We see, with Thomas touching his finger into the hand and his hand into the side where Jesus was pierced. Touching him. Seeing that and that was after his death and resurrection. He still had a physical fleshly body at that point, even after his death and resurrection. He was tempted with fleshly desires. You know, we talked this morning about him being around the prostitutes and being around the sinners and the tax collectors and all of these individuals. And we think, well, yeah, but he was Jesus. So he wasn't, you know, if I was around women that were loose women like that, I'd be tempted to do something that I shouldn't with them. But he was Jesus. He wasn't tempted. He was tempted. He just didn't give in to the temptation. Matthew chapter 4, verses 2 and 3, the devil tempted him in those verses as well as in other the passage following that. He tempted him three different times. He tempted him with the lust of the eyes. He tempted him with the lust of the flesh. And he tempted him with the pride of life. Those are the only three ways we're tempted. Now, there are a lot of different temptations that fall, but all of them fall into one or maybe two of those categories. Everything. It's either a fleshly desire. It's a lust of the eyes where, you know, we just, you know, a house. Oh, I want that house because that house looks good. I want that car because that car looks good. That's lust of the eyes. Lust of the flesh, maybe a drug, an alcohol, overeating, all these kinds of things. That's what the devil tempted him with. Turn these stones into bread. Jesus could do it. And Jesus was hungry because he hadn't eaten anything for 40 days and nights. I want you to think about that for a minute. Some of you've had medical tests where you couldn't eat for the day before you had to go for the... hungry. Now try 40 days. Jesus was hungry. If it had been me, I would have said, forget Turner, I'll just eat the rocks. But Jesus said, no, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Jesus was tempted because he was hungry, but he didn't give in to the temptation. And Satan continued to tempt him. In Hebrews 4, verses 14 and 15, verse 15 in particular, it says, but was in all points tempted like as we, yet without sin. Now that doesn't mean that he was tempted to drink whiskey, because they didn't have whiskey then. But he was tempted with alcohol. There was alcohol in their day and age. It may not have been the same kind of alcohol. But he wasn't tempted with drugs. Well, he was tempted in all points like as we. He may not have necessarily been tempted with the exact same sin, but he was tempted in all the same points, in all those same categories. You see, because again, all sin falls into certain categories. The lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life. He was tempted by those things. If he was a man, and I know he was a man, when they brought the adulterous woman to him who had been caught in the very act and they dragged her unclothed before him, he was tempted to look upon her nakedness. He didn't, but he was tempted to. Now that's very important for the men out here particularly. All around you every day you're bombarded with images of people, women in particular, who are immodest. And you're tempted to look. We're tempted to look. We don't have to look. When David, on the rooftop, he said, there's a naked woman over there, and I'm not going to look over there anymore. But David did more like what a lot of us would do. Was that a naked? Yep. Yep, that's a naked woman over there. And then he began to stare, and then he began to desire her, and then he had her husband killed so he could have her. In our society, we're not going to be able to completely avoid seeing immodesty. But when it flashes before our eyes, we can turn away from it, or if it's on the television screen, we can turn the channel or turn the TV off, or we can continue to just... and stare at it. That's the choice we have. Jesus chose not to lust, even though he was presented with that opportunity. He chose not to lust. He was tempted, though, with fleshly desires. You see, we have to understand that when Jesus became a human being, he gave up some of the rights of deity that he had held before. One of those was, God cannot sin, neither can he be tempted with sin. When Jesus became a man, even though he was the Son of God, and even though he was God in the flesh, he gave up the right to not be tempted with sin. And he gave Satan the opportunity to tempt him. He allowed Satan that much. Now remember, it wouldn't be a temptation if he couldn't have done it. It was a temptation. He could have fallen to any of those temptations, but he didn't. But he was tempted. He bled. John chapter 19, verses 34 and 35. Matthew chapter 27, verses 25 and 26. He bled. Real blood. Now, I don't know if it was A or B or AB negative or O positive. I don't know what kind of blood he had, but I know he had blood. It was real blood. Human blood. It wasn't God's blood, because God doesn't have blood. It had to have been the human blood that He inherited from His mother Mary. He didn't inherit that from the Holy Spirit when He was conceived in the womb. He inherited that from the mother's side. And then finally, He died. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 50. And Mark chapter 15 and verses 43 and through 45. He died dead. They pierced Him in the side with the spear. Forth came blood and water, indicating that not only did He die, He had been dead a while when that happened. The blood and the other liquid that was with the blood had separated in His body. And that's one of the things that happens. The blood and the plasma and the water, it separates. When they pierced, the blood and the water all came out together. There's also the congestion of the cavity of the lungs filling with fluid from His drowning, basically, suffocation, asphyxiation on the cross, and all of that. Now remember, the centurions knew He was dead. They were practiced at this. They executed hundreds and hundreds, thousands of people. They knew when somebody was dead. They were probably more efficient at telling whether someone was dead than the doctors of Jesus' day, because they'd probably seen just as much death. They were soldiers who fought in battle and saw death, and they also worked as involved in the crucifixions and saw death. They knew what death looked like. And when they saw Jesus, they said, "He's dead." Pilate called the centurion and asked him whether he had been dead, any while dead, whether he was dead. The centurion said, "Yeah, he's dead." And so they gave the body to Joseph to bury. Then he remained in that tomb for 3 days. 3 days in the tomb. Dead. Not breathing. Heart not beating. Brain not functioning. Dead. Of course, if that was all there was to it, if he was just a man and all of these things, so what? Because we talked about last week that He rose from the dead because He was God. He had the power in Himself that the Father had given Him to rise up and conquer death. For these and many other passages testify to the humanity of Christ. You know, we don't think about the common everyday things that Christ did. Just the day-to-day activities. Sleeping, eating, drinking. Just the same things that we do every day. I want us to come to grips with that and think about Him. And think about how we can be like Him, because He became like us. I want us to realize that our salvation depends just as much on His humanity as it does on His deity. If He hadn't been God, then He'd have just been a dead man. But if He hadn't been man, then the whole thing would have just been a hoax, put up a play, a show, a special effects. Spectacular, put on by God. And if He wasn't really a man, God would have just been going through the motions and making it appear like He cared about us enough to send His Son, when in actuality, according to the Docetist view, Jesus could never have really died on that cross because He never really was a human being. How sad. I can't imagine why people would believe it. It destroys the gospel. You see, the gospel is the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. If you take away His humanity, you take away the death and the burial. Two-thirds of that's gone. Two-thirds of the gospel wiped out. We need to recognize Jesus as the Son of God. But we need to also recognize Him as the Son of Man. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.